Do you remember what your high school history class was like? Did you like learning about history? Or did you just have to memorize dates? What would make history education less boring? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May 12th. A recent piece in The Atlantic caught our eye. It was about how to move beyond rote memorization and regurgitation of historical facts. It advocated linking history to current events to make history more relevant and interesting to high school students. We're going to continue the lesson this hour, and we'll welcome your ideas on how to improve high school history education. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ken Davis. He's the author of the Don't Know Much About History book. He's also the author of the Don't Know Much About series. His most recent book is Don't Know Much About American Presidents. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for being back with us. So why do we think high school history was so boring anyway?
Well, I think you summed it up in the single word there that I've been hearing for about 25 years. It's so boring. It's so dull. It's so dry. It's all those dates and battles and speeches. And, of course, history is anything but that. I mean, history has to be taught as real stories of real people, and then it becomes a lot more interesting and relevant. I seem to remember that was a big buzzword when I was in high school back in the 1960s and early 70s, and here we are still discussing it. I've had a lot of experience talking with teachers over the past few years. My books are not written for the school market. They're not textbooks in the traditional sense. And I do talk to a lot of history teachers because, let me just say, that this is a problem that the history teachers are aware of as well. They know that the things they're forced to teach and the books they are usually given to teach with are boring because we have a system in which we are expected to know what date something happened for the final exam or for the SAT, and history is not about that. History is really about making connections between past and present. It's about understanding nuance. It's not just list three causes of World War One, and that usually takes a little bit more time. So there's a whole lot of factors at play here. And boredom is really the end result of a lot of flawed teaching techniques and requirements from a system that really wants students to, learn a body of knowledge and rather than learn how to think like a historian.
Yeah, maybe I'm unusual. I actually remember liking my high school history class, but I remember one aspect of it more than anything else, and it was a research paper that my history teacher, Mr. Koepke, assigned us. And there was a question, and it was, did FDR know about Pearl Harbor before it happened? And then we had to look into it. And maybe that sounds boring, but it was the first time I was actually, just sort of let loose on a research question like that.
Well, that's what you were challenged to think, and that's what great teachers really do. As I said, and I don't want to, flog a horse here, that we have a system that doesn't encourage that and doesn't especially value it. I didn't want to get into a whole dialectic on what's wrong with schools today because that's a long conversation. I am not an academic expert. I've never used the word pedagogy in a sentence until just now. And what I've learned over talking over 25 years of talking about history and talking to people who say, wow, why didn't they tell us that in school, is that Americans don't hate history. They just hate the version they got in high school. So it's really a matter of a couple of things, I think. First of all, we don't spend enough time on it. Most kids get a little civics and the basics in elementary school, and we move through middle school Then we get maybe a year of American high school in most high schools, and every state is, of course, different. And after that, it becomes an elective. So I think that one thing we can do is, first of all, spend more time on it, and then we don't have to reduce it into these bite-sized pieces. Treat it more as stories. When I tell people, for instance, that when I ask them, because they don't know much about series, it's usually about asking questions and then trying to answer them in interesting ways. When I tell people or ask people, you know, who were the first pilgrims in America, the answer is usually the ones that came on the Mayflower, which is incorrect. The first pilgrims in America were French. They landed in Florida 50 years before the Mayflower arrived. They were then wiped out by the Spanish, not because they were French, but because they were Protestants. And this story about a religious bloodbath in Florida 50 years before the Mayflower sailed isn't in most textbooks, but it should be, because it's really about how this country was founded and the religious wars that were going on from the very beginning of the country. And it's a fascinating story that's about pirates and massacres and gee, you know, tell that to most people and they'll sit up and pay attention. It's not a tidy story and it's not an easy story to tell, but it's an important story. And when I tell people that, they say, wow, why didn't they tell us that one in high school?
Yeah, why didn't they tell us that one in high school? I didn't know that one.
I wrote about this in a book that is called America's Hidden History, and that's part of the problem, that we create and craft a story to tell the children that is tidy and neat and is heroic and full of pride and patriotism, and every country does that, obviously. And the problem with that is that it leaves out the good parts, like the story of the real first pilgrims in America. And leaving out the good parts usually means leaving out the important parts. We certainly start to teach our children from a very early age about George Washington, and most people have moved on from the cherry tree story and the wooden teeth, both of which are legendary or mythological, whichever you want to call it. And we never really get to the real Washington, who is a fascinating, fascinating character, a human being with flaws and imperfections and ambitions and ego, and that it's so much more interesting when you see all of those and when you ask questions. You know, how does the man who's leading the country in its fight for liberty keep slaves? And when you put it in questions like that, like asking the question your teacher did about Pearl Harbor, you are making students think, and that's what we should be doing. And history is a great way to make people think.
We are talking about high school history education and how to make it more interesting. What was the most memorable part of your high school history class, or did you sleep through your history class? How can we improve high school history education? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ken Davis. He is the author of the Don't Know Much About series, including Don't Know Much About History. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May 12th. We are talking with the author of Don't Know Much About History, Ken Davis, about how we can make history more relevant, more interesting to high school students. Our conversation is prompted by a recent piece in The Atlantic magazine, which was about how to move beyond memorization and regurgitation of facts, and advocated linking history to current events to make it more interesting to high school students. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take some calls. Dave in Janesville is with us. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. You know, I never really had much of an appreciation for history when I was in high. I'm almost 60, okay, so I mean, history was a way back when. But in the last 20, 30 years, I've read a lot about our founding fathers and history and the migration west. And what's fascinating, when I talk to my nieces and nephews about history and American history especially, they say, oh, we are founding fathers, we're slave owners, they were terrible people. Or we got in a discussion about 12 years a slave, and they were saying, well, how could these people, that movie, how could these people be so cruel? And I said, I think what they need to do, because high school students only know what they know 16 years. I said, put yourself back in those times. I said, people didn't know what was going on 2 miles down the road. They had newspapers. And the other thing is with farming and back in those days, work was every day. You didn't have a day off. And you were more concerned if you lost a chicken or someone came and took your chicken or even your dairy cow or a hog. That was serious stuff. That was like stealing a refrigerator full of food. But I think they need to take history and try to relate to these kids how it was back then. Not that our founding fathers owned slaves or whatever, but try and dig into the culture and how people thought back then, because it was really different than it is today.
Mm-hmm. Ken Davis?
Thanks for the call. Interesting point. I think that it scratches something very real, which is that we certainly, most of us grew up learning, and probably still is true, that the so-called great man approach to history. And there's been we learn about Washington and Hamilton and Jefferson and Lincoln and not much about the people who actually lived. I think there's been a real reassessment in schools of that approach. And so a lot of history teachers are taking more of the approach of saying, wait a minute, there are an awful lot of people here who got left out of the history book. Certainly when I was growing up, there were no African Americans, there were no women, and mostly no Native Americans in my history books. Those are certainly the stories I've tried to tell, and very much of that story is what the caller was pointing out, that we sometimes have to talk about what the real people in America were doing while these great debates like the Missouri Compromise are going on, and you can do both. I spend a lot of time in the last 3 years going, I said my books are not for classrooms, but I speak to teachers a lot. I actually visit classrooms via Skype. I've done about 100 classroom visits over the past 3 years. Teachers in history classes in particular, the ones that I've been dealing with, are desperate to get their kids interested and involved in history, and they're looking to use the technology to do it, and they are taking more of the approach that the caller just used of going beyond just the famous people and talking about what life was like for the average person. I talk to kids who are 12, 13, 14 about the Civil War, about slavery, or about the Industrial Revolution. I said, 150 years ago, you wouldn't have been sitting in classroom. The war was on, you might have been in uniform if you were a boy. If you were a girl, you might have been running the farm or working in a factory. And you always have to try and make that connection between what would my life have been like 100 years ago or 150 years ago, and that's one of the key ways to do it.
That just I'll move on to another caller. Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
I understand you're a high school. You're a history teacher.
Yeah, 26 years actually, in both an urban situation and a suburban situation. So I love it. And just so. Like when I started 26 years ago in 1987, there were some curmudgeons who did teach, names, dates, places, and things like that. But things have changed significantly, at least in our high school and the ones that I've been in. They've changed significantly to where we do tell a story. And it's not the tidy little, only patriotic thing either. We tell what I think is a true story of American history, that there were some good things and some very bad things that happened.
Yeah. And it's taught in a way that your high school students are engaged with the subject matter?
Oh, yeah. We do a number of different things with them. We're always trying to diversify for students, different, types of learning strategies, to make it to where kids do, enjoy the story of history of our country.
So taught more as a story, Ken Davis, and you that's what you're saying. It should be done, but you're talking maybe real stories about real people.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate the call, and I know that there are a lot of teachers like the caller who are doing that and a lot of school systems that are doing that, and I certainly think that the books reflect a change in attitude, certainly from 40 or 50 years ago. But on the other hand, I think it's too much the exception, not the rule still in many schools across the country. We go back to this experience that I've been having talking to classrooms, and I see the enthusiasm that the kids have for history when it's dealt with in a different way, and when they're asked to think and to be challenged and to let their curiosity go. This makes school a lot more interesting. So I know that there are teachers and school systems that are doing it, but when we look at the broad studies and the questionnaires, and sometimes they can be rather anecdotal, we still have a woeful lack of understanding of history. And, you know, it certainly pops up every once in a while in the media. Look, we don't have to go very far in scratching the surface in this country to see that the racial attitudes of this country, and, you know, whether you want to say, well, one old man who's a rancher out west shouldn't represent, but that kind of thinking does exist, and it still exists on a lot of different levels. I know I talk about the Civil War a lot because we're having the 150th anniversary of all these different events as we go through this period, and people are still talking about states' rights because it became such a buzzword. Oh, no, it wasn't about slavery. Of course it was about slavery, and that's the only way we can talk about it. But then we get into a conversation about slavery like the one we've been having in the last few weeks, and we really fall off the rails.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry Jim in Milwaukee dropped off. I wanted to ask him a follow-up in terms of what was being advocated in this piece in The Atlantic was more of linking history to current events. And you just brought up a current event. Do you think, Ken Davis, that that's, besides telling real stories about real people, that taking an issue in the news and relating it to history is the way to go?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you certainly can't understand what's going on in Ukraine without having some sense of history. And, of course, we're getting into Russian history, but that touches on American history. Yeah. I did not learn any Russian history when I was growing up, obviously a different generation, because we weren't told what those godless communists were doing. So the fact that the Soviet people, the Russian people, suffered an inordinate amount during the 20th century because of two world wars that were terrible for America, but were crushingly horrible for the Russian people. And I'm not saying that to excuse what's going on in the Ukraine, but you certainly have to understand and have some context to understand what's going on in a particular country today. And that's the point of studying history in the first place. Connecting the headlines to history is what it must be about. And I know that there are teachers who are doing it every single day. The other thing, I'm just going to throw this out there, is that, you know, parents ask me all the time, well, how did you get interested in history? How do I get my kid interested in history? I am the old school lover of the field trip. My love for history came from the fact that we took our summer vacations. We went to places like Gettysburg and Valley Forge and Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York. And I learned that history isn't something that happens in books. It happens to real people in real places. So I always encourage parents and teachers, and you don't have to go to Gettysburg to get history. It's all around. There's some kind of local history. And when you touch it and feel it and smell it, it becomes a lot more real. So that's another important thing besides the current events aspect, which is crucial. The make it real aspect, and I think that's a place where parents have to step in and help out the teachers.
John in Madison, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Davis. I've got three of your books, and they're excellent, and I'm a historical buff, and I agree with you completely. For the populace to be able to analyze current policy, foreign policy and domestic. You can't do it without a perspective. You have to see things in a framework, and you can't do that, learn it with rote memorization. There's got to be memorization plus analysis. And my chief disagreement with the way history is taught, and I think it's absolutely essential, as is an introductory class to philosophy, is that I don't think the government wants it. In other words, if you have a populace that is historically educated and can analyze what the government is doing, you can't, in Lippmann's terms, manufacture consent as easily. In other words, if the government, if the people can see the Iraq War in the context of the Vietnam War, in the context of the Korean War, the Spanish-American War, and they can see U.S. actions in relationship to all the other empires, this farce of American exceptionalism would fall on its face.
John, thank you. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will get our guest, Ken Davis, to respond to your remarks. And we'll welcome your questions and your reviews of high school history instruction. How do we make it less boring? How do we make it more relevant? How important is history education as far as you're concerned? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Ken Davis. He is the author of the Don't Know Much About series, including Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. High school history can be one of the most dreaded subjects if it is nothing more than memorization. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, May 12th. We saw a recent piece in The Atlantic magazine. It was about how to move beyond memorization and regurgitation of historical facts and linking history to current events to make history more relevant and more interesting to high school students. And we wonder what you think. How can we make high school history education more interesting? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Ken Davis, author of the Don't Know Much About series, including Don't Know Much About History. His most recent book is Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. We just heard from John in Madison just before news time, who said he was a history buff and completely agreed, Ken Davis, with what you were trying to say about making history more relevant, more interesting, and said how important it was to learn about history. Because I guess it was because then we can understand our past mistakes so we don't repeat them. And he actually thought that maybe our government would rather not have us know that much about history. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's certainly a fair point. I'm not sure if it rises to the level of, you know, a government conspiracy to keep the people ignorant. You know, I don't want to take it that far. But certainly we have a school system that is still in many places largely modeled on a system that worked for the early, you know, late 19th and early 20th century. Put people in rows, make them respond to bells so that we could have a good trained factory worker system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not in that country any longer. We are in a country where we need people to think in very, very different ways and not be trained to go to the factory. So that's one thing. And a lot of schools are changing. We're seeing changes in schools. If you went into a school today in many places in the country, you wouldn't recognize it as the rows of desks that you might be familiar with from your childhood. Now, that being said, I think that's a good and healthy thing, and schools have to change, and the technology should be there to make those changes. But it still always comes down to me to a great teacher in front of the room is what makes a difference. And I think One thing we haven't touched on, and we're dancing around a little bit perhaps, is the fact that some teachers, especially in the history area, it's one thing to teach math. You know, there's a set of things you learn. But when you're teaching history, you are touching on the third rail of American education in a lot of ways, because you're raising questions that sometimes the parents aren't going to like the questions or the answers that might come up. One example, most people don't know still who Mildred Loving is in this country. Her name comes up because a judge in Arkansas raised it the other day in a same-sex ruling. Mildred Loving was an 18-year-old girl when she challenged the laws against miscegenation or mixed marriage in this country. She wrote to then-Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy saying that her husband, who was white, had been arrested because he had married her and she was black, and they were arrested in the state of Virginia, even though they had been legally married in Washington, D.C. That case is the case that broke the laws against mixed marriage in this country, and it was cited in a same-sex decision the other day. That's an important case that every American should know, just the way they should know Brown versus Board of Education or the Dred Scott decision, because it does affect what's going on in this country today. I would dare say that there would be a lot of teachers who would be afraid of going near talking about Mildred Loving's case and same-sex marriage, because they're going to get a lot of flack from home if they do.
I know. Here's Judy from Appleton, who said she had a history teacher who turns out had personal experience arresting a highly ranked Nazi during World War II. And she thinks this is a good example of how having people who have been a part of history telling these stories might make history class more compelling.
Oh, I think that's a great point. I read stories all the time about how teachers are bringing people in. Obviously, not all teachers have such experiences themselves. But there was a riveting story a few months ago. I believe it was a story that was aired on public radio about a Holocaust survivor who goes in and talks to students about her experiences. And, you know, when you make history personal, it changes it entirely. These are what we're saying are the real stories that the history books often leave out. And to be able to hear it from somebody themselves, if one hears John Lewis, for instance, a Congressman John Lewis, talk about the civil rights movement, it's not reduced to a long list of court decisions, but it becomes a vivid human story. And look, we have something called human interest that sells a lot of newspapers. And history is the ultimate human interest story. And when we tell it like that, it becomes a lot more riveting. People went and watched 12 Years a Slave because it is a riveting film. It's not an easy film to watch. It's not a happy story, but it is part of the history of this country that has far too long been swept under euphemisms like, you know, emancipation and manumission and indentured servitude.
Uh-oh. Ken Davis, do we lose you? Let's try to get him back, because we have a few more minutes with Ken Davis talking about how to make history class less boring. And we'll continue to take your questions and your ideas at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Coming up in just over 5 minutes, it's our Monday morning wake-up call. And our guest from MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, will say that every child deserves a designated driver, and how a new report by the American Academy of Pediatrics is a call for tougher drunk driving, child endangerment legislation. That's coming up in our wake-up call in about 5 or 6 minutes. All right, we have a Ken Davis back. You were just talking, Ken Davis, about 12 Years a Slave, and I wanted to ask you about, is that something that history teachers are doing more of or should do more of, turning to pop culture such as movies to teach history?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think that you ignore pop culture, and I'm not sure I put 12 years of slave into
right.
pop culture, but you ignore it at your risk because, I mean, if you're not talking to kids about what they're talking about and what's in the air around them, you are going to lose them. And certainly it's a lot easier when you have a film like 12 Years a Slave, which is obviously not, you know, appropriate to every age level, but it's certainly something that that a high, you know, an intelligent high school student could see. I mean, you can certainly read Solomon. This is not fiction. This was an account written by the man who experiences Solomon Northrup. So when you when you ignore pop culture, you do it at your peril because you're just going to lose your audience, the kids.
Let's go to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Joy. I'd like to make a recommendation for an event here in Wisconsin the first weekend in August, the Civil War reenactment at Boscobel. They'll have between 800 and 1,000 reenactors. People who played General Grant, President Lincoln, Lee, Custer, and Doc Holliday, they will all be there. And I polished some of their shoes, and those gentlemen know their history. I had General Grant up on the stand once down there. A crowd gathered around, started asking him questions, and he was answering me that a little bit on. And after he got done and got down, I was talking to him. He said, I got 30 books on General Grant on my library shelves at home. He said, they don't fool me. That is well worth it if you have between 800, like I said, 800 and 1,000 reenactors down there, first weekend in August.
No, what about Civil War reenactments, things like that, Ken Davis?
I love them, and as the caller mentioned out, these people who go into reenactment don't just learn a part. They become these people in many ways, and it's quite extraordinary to see whether they're playing General Grant or maybe they're playing their great-great-grandfather whose eyeglasses and the diary they may still have. And for them, this is not playing a part. It really is living a piece of history. So reenactments can be great ways, especially to get kids in touch with something they haven't seen before, and to know what it was like to put on those very hot uniforms in the summertime and go into battle is, again, brings it down to a very human level.
Mm-hmm. And which reminds me, with school is going to be letting out pretty soon here in Wisconsin and everywhere for that matter. Summertime field trips and vacations with your family. You can, as you mentioned in our first half hour, parents can help teach their kids about history, help the teachers out.
Absolutely. Joy, I keep on my desk, this is honest, a revolver, a wooden revolver that I got from my first trip to Gettysburg in 1963. I was 9 years old, and I stood in that field as a nine-year-old, and I didn't understand what the war was really about, but I knew that this was a special place. I knew that I was standing on the ground that Lincoln said had been hallowed by the men who gave the last full measure of devotion. And I don't think you can replace that in any way from a book. There are wonderful, wonderful books, and there are great book. And there's a whole new range of books coming out in the YA, the market, the middle grade market, that makes history much more alive and interesting. So you can do an awful lot of things in the home to encourage this, and certainly summer trips is one of them.
Yeah, and it's not just kids. I'm planning on going to Springfield, Illinois to see the Abraham Lincoln Museum maybe this summer. I mean, you can continue learning about history and people even when you're an old fuddy-duddy.
Oh, I feel like if I don't learn something new every day, I've had a bad day. And the wonderful thing is the surprises you sometimes find, not just going to the places we all know, like a Gettysburg. But I went down to St. Augustine a few years ago in Florida doing some research, and I wandered out of the downtown area and found a place called Fort Matanzas. That's a Spanish word for slaughter. And that is how I learned the story of the French pilgrims who were slaughtered by the Spanish. It's not something that's in the history books, but it's a national park just minutes away from downtown. So we get off the beaten path sometimes, and we find all sorts of hidden history and wonderful stories.
Matt in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say that history is the story of our past. And if teachers would tell the story, don't turn it into a bunch of memorized dates or places, but tell the story accurately, unrevised, unsanitized. What kid doesn't want to hear a good story? And I think you could get so far just adopting that one practice. Just put it in story form. Thank you.
I think the caller is absolutely right, and I would say that most teachers I speak to agree with him completely. And, you know, there's sometimes a disconnect between the teachers who are in the classroom and administrators who have, you know, a different agenda in some cases, whether it's, you know, making sure the kids pass the standardized tests or avoiding anything controversial. Those are the problems that the actual teachers in the classroom face. And the teachers I had know and have met over the years are dedicated professionals who really want their kids to succeed and have a love of this stuff and want to transfer it. And sometimes it does the requirements of an educational system get in the way of doing that.
Well, very, very briefly as we wrap up, what do you think it'll take to make history more interesting for all?
Well, I think that, you know, part of the problem is it's wasted on the young. This stuff becomes a lot more interesting to us. As some of your callers have said, when we're, you know, 30 or 40 or 50, all of a sudden history becomes a lot more interesting than it was when we were 14 or 18. And that's part of it. But I think that giving teachers the right tools in the classroom and giving them some leeway to tell these stories is going to go a long way.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Joy. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Ken Davis is the author of the Don't Know Much About series, including Don't Know Much About History. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.